My name is Rob Bosser. I'm with the University of Rochester Department of Psychiatry. And I'm going to speak with you today about connectedness with family and suicide ideation and attempts among children of alcoholics, a high-risk population on whom we have a good deal of data about relationships with their parents. And so, given the interest in connectedness as a suicide prevention strategy, a unique opportunity to learn something about how these dynamics might work. Before I go further, I'd just like to say I don't have any conflicts to disclose other than conflicts in time, but this work was funded by the Centers for Disease Control and with my co-investigators Ken Connor and Peter Wyman, Najee Liu, and Kim Kalkinen and Dr. Shin too. So very quickly, I'll go over the new national strategy. I do a lot of suicide prevention research. It's sort of my forte. And in September of 2010, the new national strategy for suicide prevention was released. This national strategy, unlike the previous national strategy, emphasized heavily the connections between individuals, their communities, and clinical care, and a continuum of risk starting with communities and resulting optimally in appropriate mental health and medical care to reduce risk for suicide. The CDC has been ahead of the game for a while in talking about connectedness as a suicide prevention strategy, but other than saying connectedness is good, we have very little to work with and very little to help people think about developing programs or practices that they may actually mitigate risk for suicide. I'll talk to you a little bit about where we got our sample from, analytic strategy, and then talk a lot about the results and what I believe they mean. So the idea that connectedness is a suicide prevention strategy makes sense, and it's been around a really long time. Certainly Durkheim talked about it more than 150 years ago. People who are more integrated with other people have a lower risk for suicide, and that seems to be pretty straightforward. However, building a suicide prevention program around some common sense knowledge is not always the easiest thing to do, particularly in the absence of any empirical evidence. So empirical support for this as a concept has been developing, but certainly I believe in its infancy. The national strategy embraced the idea of connectedness and included, this is from their clinical goals, increased knowledge of the factors that offer protection from suicidal behaviors and that promote wellness and recovery. Then mentioned below the connectedness to others, including family members, teachers, co-workers, community organizations, and social institutions has been identified as an important protective factor. These protective relationships increase a person's sense of belonging, foster a sense of personal worth, and provide access to sources of support. And all that's really good stuff. What it goes on to say, though, also is that most often where connectedness is needed is among marginalized groups or those that have experienced trauma. And those are often the most challenging groups to think about developing suicide prevention programs for, or connectedness programs, because they find themselves on the margins of our normal peer groups and community groups and are therefore difficult to provide services for. The CDC released a white paper, and they entitled it Promoting Individual, Family, and Community Connectedness to Prevent Suicide Behavior, and they pretty much say the same thing. However, they make a special point of emphasis in noting that connectedness exists between individuals and their families to the community organizations, and connectedness among community organizations. And if you want to throw a bunch of labels on it, you can either talk about that as connectedness with parents or social capital. It's everything from how individuals operate with other individuals to how individuals operate within the community and how communities operate across each other, and how those can be used to bring people to care and bring to bear the resources of communities for those people at risk. And so they identify three key foci: interrupting the development of fatal and non-fatal suicide behavior, integrating approaches to preventing profound life stresses that may contribute to suicidal behavior and interpersonal violence, and addressing vulnerable populations. Again, the emphasis of connectedness on vulnerable populations. I would just like to say for a minute that as a public health-oriented suicide prevention person, I'm often up talking about suicide prevention, but we don't talk about that second bullet quite often enough, I think. Suicidal behavior and other interpersonal violence, or maybe expanded other unnatural causes of death. We tend to make suicide prevention a mental health issue, and certainly there's a significant amount of psychiatric diagnoses among people who die from suicide. But we may have forgotten along the way some community-based approaches and family-based approaches that don't depend upon a diagnosis. One of the statistics I love to throw out and ask you to think about is my other hat, when I was across the hall, was presenting as a Department of Veterans Affairs researcher, a suicide prevention researcher for the VA. And in our population each year, about 55% of the people who die from suicide have a psychiatric diagnosis, but that means that 45 to 50% of the people don't. And so if you're relying on mental health services and clinical care to address the problem, you're ultimately going to fail because you're going to miss 50% of the time. Now, the answer has traditionally been, but we just need better screening, we need better outreach, we need to get people into care. Maybe. But maybe we also need better community-based and family-based approaches to supplement those increased assessment and clinical strategies to help prevent this. And if it's truly a public health solution, I think it needs to include some of those. So there is some evidence of the impact of connectedness. One recent study showed that adolescents who had a high degree of connection with peers were 50% less likely to attempt suicide in the 12 months following inpatient hospitalization, a period we know to be of incredible risk for suicide and suicide attempt. Risk for death from suicide following an inpatient psychiatric hospitalization has been shown to be as much as 50 times higher than the base rate of suicide among the comparable populations. Among a high-risk sample of youth, suicide ideation was negatively associated with school connectedness in all parenting styles. So interaction with parents, regardless of the type of the interaction, was shown to have a decrease, an impact on suicide ideation. However, the association between suicide ideation and perceptions of having a caring parent in supervision were stronger for females. So there is some suggestion that there's some gender differences in this. And family connectedness was more important than a peer or school connectedness as a protective factor against suicide ideation plans and attempts. So these are our project aims: to test a developmental model of risk that considers parent, family, and child factors, to examine those factors as promotive and protective factors. We're very interested in things that mitigate risk conferred by other characteristics associated with risk. Protective factors are those things that just reduce risk overall, promotive factors. And examine promotive and protective factors at multiple levels. So very quickly, we took data from something called the Collaborative Study of Genetics of Alcoholism. In COGA, you have adults who are alcoholics or have alcohol use disorders, and they also assess the kids over time. Children of alcoholic parents were assessed at two time points approximately 60 months apart. And during that time, they took a myriad of assessments, including those that are associated with risk for suicide, drug use, alcohol use, conduct disorder, depression, parent substance use, but also peer reports of suicide ideation and attempt, and those became our foundation for our model. Our analytic strategy was to use data from the 865 youth who had two waves of data collection present or who completed both assessments. Connectedness measures were constructed from other data available within the survey. It was not meant to measure connectedness. We did a bunch of exploratory and confirmatory analysis to identify measures of connectedness with some empirical support. Suicide behaviors were included both as independent outcomes, suicide thoughts or ideation and plans or attempts, and as a categorical measure with none, suicide ideation and suicide attempt. We used univariate, multivariate, generalized estimating equations to compensate for the clustering within families, because you have one youth reporting on both parents and also siblings from the same family, so you need to consider families. So children were clustered within families, and we did it all using SAS, which is the only thing I know how to use. So we, in our exploratory measures, came up with four different domains of connectedness. Physical connectedness, and I'll tell you what those are in a minute, connectedness with mothers, connectedness with fathers, and connectedness with peers. And interestingly, in the empirical sort of side of this whole thing, connectedness with mothers and fathers came out separately. So they emerged as two distinct constructs, and that's going to be very important in just a couple of minutes. The physical connectedness remained significant. It had a high degree of reliability. The Cronbach's alpha was over 0.7, so it's moderate reliability. And it was the simple question was asked about both the mothers and the fathers. Does your mother or father show that he or she cares about others in the family by giving them hugs or kisses? And those two, in factor analysis and structural equation models, clumped together to form this one construct that we just call physical connectedness. They touch them, let them know that they care about them. There were three measures that were used for both mother and father connectedness. They were the same measures, but they broke out in separate constructs. And they were all three: does your mother or father go out of his way to tell you did a good job? When you're at an activity at school, does your mother or father usually try to attend? And do you feel very close to your mother or father? And finally, sibling connectedness was our last measure. Even though you sometimes fight with your brothers and sisters, would you say that you really like each other? And do you do something together other than watching TV? And those became our four measures of connectedness. There was a fifth measure of connectedness, but it was sibling-based. It had some empirical support. It was valid and reliable according to our estimates. However, it didn't emerge as being significant in any of the relationships, so we dropped it from consideration. So very quickly, this is the baseline and follow-up prevalence of suicide ideation, plans, and attempts. We're generally comparable with YRBS data, although the suicide attempts is a little bit lower than we would expect to see, but about 15% of our population says they thought about seriously considered suicide in the 12 months before the assessment. About 3% at baseline, about 5% at follow-up said that they had attempted suicide in the last 12 months. Importantly, the follow-up assessments were independent of the baseline assessment, so they're mutually exclusive. There is some variability in the direction that we'd expect by gender, with girls reporting both more suicide ideation and attempts than boys, suicide ideation plans and attempts than boys. The prevalence of some factors and characteristics associated with risk were also present. I concluded gender and there is a risk characteristic, but about 25% had clinically significant symptoms of depression, about 5% had substance abuse and alcohol use disorders even at this age, and about 50% had some symptoms of a conduct disorder. Looking at the univariate relationships and bivariate relationships, we saw significant variability associated with all measures of connectedness. Well, I'm sorry, with mother connectedness, father connectedness, and sibling relationships. Parent physical connectedness was not associated with significant relationships. And that was with a combined measure using none versus ideation plans and ideation and plans and attempts. That's what I was trying to fix, and I apologize for that, because it's really important. But if I would have time to have time my slide. So if you can see in my mind what I'm trying to show you, the very top line goes through physical connectedness, mother connectedness, father connectedness, sibling connectedness, and then what we called uber parent, and then uber family. And uber parent was we combined all the measures of connectedness for the mother and father, and uber family was all everything. And the first, second column is attempts. And all that dark color you see, the bold, is a statistically significant relationship. And so this is really important. I really apologize if the table didn't come out. Because the first one is attempt. The second one is ideation. And what we're able to show, and this is the univariate relationships, is that connectedness with your parents significantly lowered the risk of suicide attempt, but not thoughts of suicide, which, from my perspective, makes a tremendous amount of sense. It's not necessarily going to mitigate the risk of distress. You may still think about suicide, but it's going to prevent that action. It's going to prevent a suicide attempt if you're more strongly connected with your family. And you can see the only one that didn't actually emerge was sibling relationships, and you can't actually see it, but I can. And it's the only one that didn't emerge. The uber family, the uber parent, and the parent measures all emerged as being protective against suicide attempts in the univariate sense. And that horrible slide is the multivariate sense, controlling for conduct disorder and depression and substance use and gender and age and race, ethnicity, the other things as well. And the really important thing that I can tell you that you can't see is that only father connectedness mattered. When you put in the rest of those relationships, connectedness with fathers and not mothers mattered. Not mothers, not siblings, it was fathers that mattered among this high-risk sample of youth. Total family did and total parent did, but that was driven largely by the parent, the father relationship. And I'm really sorry about that. We tested for interactions to see if the effect of connectedness lowered the risk of other risk factors or in fact had its own independent effect that was not driven by mitigation of risk associated with depression and substance use and other factors associated with risk. And we didn't find any significant relationships. For us, that tells us that it's a promotive, not a protective factor. You still have risk if you have depression. Connectedness doesn't necessarily lower the risk associated with depression. Connectedness lowers the risk for suicide overall, independent of whether or not you have other risk characteristics. And that's an important prevention point for us. So in summary, the prevalence of self-report suicide ideation or plans and attempts was significantly lower among children who reported connectedness with parents and siblings. Differences in the associations between connectedness and ideation versus attempt were identified. Connectedness seems to reduce the risk for attempt, not for ideation. It varied by relationship and was important for fathers. So, conclusions. It may be a very important suicide prevention strategy. In this sample of high-risk youth, its importance is in reducing the risk for suicide attempt. It didn't have an impact on suicide ideation. And the fact that it was most strongly associated with the relationship with the father, which, by the way, about 70% of the kids had both mother and father reports, about 30% of the kids only had, a mother report, not a father report. So fathers were absent in these data more often than were mothers. When a father wasn't there, we just set the value to zero. And programs to enhance connectedness should focus on developing or strengthening healthy, positive relationships across multiple relationship categories. And there is evidence that connectedness with fathers, as I said, may be particularly important among populations of high-risk youth. And for us, the last take-home message is that it's promotive. So as a general good, if you can increase connections with fathers in particular among kids who may be experiencing distress or trauma, and this is a high-risk population. These are children of alcoholics who've been exposed to a higher than expected level of what we called conflict within the family. A suboptimal family environment is how we decided to categorize it. So kids who had higher than expected exposure to suboptimal family environments, that relationship with fathers don't matter. We didn't find a gender effect, by the way. There is no significant difference by gender in relationship with fathers. And that's me and Ken. I'm happy to have any follow-up questions. Thank you.
Thank you.